Daily News. I'm Tommy McNeil. An escalation fears grow on the border between Israel and Lebanon. Many in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, say the country's economy cannot afford a new war. Reuters correspondent Trevor Quarrel.
The hostilities between Hezbollah and the Israeli military have taken a particularly hard toll on bus drivers, says Ali Ayub.
The whole country has stopped. The situation in the whole country is bad. Nothing is working in the country.
Lebanon had already been hollowed out by a five-year economic crisis, resulting in lost jobs and less need for daily commutes. Hezbollah and Israel have been trading rocket fire for nearly 10 months in parallel with the war in Gaza, with exchanges mostly limited to the border area. But the effects have been felt nationwide.
A huge Russian missile and drone salvo launched at Ukraine on Monday targeted energy facilities nationwide and left several people dead. More from Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino.
Thousands of residents took shelter underground as sirens blared through Kyiv overnight. I would like to see a response to Moscow so that they will feel what we feel, says this woman. Ukrainian officials say Russia launched more than 200 missiles and drones in the attack. And neighboring NATO member Poland reported a drone had probably entered its airspace during the bombardment. Kyiv said the attack targeted power or other critical infrastructure in at least 10 regions.
The Taliban is rejecting concerns and criticism raised by the United Nations over new vice and virtue laws that include a ban on women's voices and bare faces in public. On Sunday, the head of the UN mission in Afghanistan said the law showed a distressing vision for the country's future. This is VOA News. 13 U.S. service members were killed 3 years ago on Monday during a suicide bombing as U.S. troops were withdrawing from Afghanistan. The attack at the Kabul airport also left 18 U.S. service members critically injured and killed 170 Afghan civilians. VOA's Jenny Dulett.
Marking the third anniversary of the bombing, families of the fallen are pressing the Biden administration for accountability for those responsible for the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. The war in Afghanistan was the longest war in U.S. history, spanning almost two decades. President Joe Biden and his administration defended his decision to bring all troops home in 2021, saying they had long achieved the mission of diminishing Al-Qaeda and preventing Afghanistan from ever being a terrorist haven. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Simi Valley, California.
The toll from devastating floods caused by relentless monsoon rain and overflowing rivers in Bangladesh has now risen to 23, with about 1.24 million families stranded across 11 districts, according to officials Monday. As floodwaters recede slowly, many of the 5.7 million affected remain isolated and in urgent need of food, clean water, medicine, and dry clothes. Above all, in the remote areas where blocked roads have hindered rescue. The Bangladesh Meteorological Department said that flood conditions could persist if the monsoon rains continued as water levels were receding very slowly. Canada announced Monday it is launching a 100% tariff on imports of Chinese-made electric vehicles, matching U.S. tariffs imposed over what Western governments say are China's subsidies that give its industry an unfair advantage. The announcement came after encouragements by U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan during a meeting with the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Cabinet Minister Sunday. Sullivan is making his first visit to Beijing Tuesday. The Philippine Coast Guard says that China deployed an excessive force of 40 ships that blocked two Philippine vessels from delivering food and other supplies to Manila's largest Coast Guard ship in a disputed shoal. Countries blamed each other for the confrontation Monday at Sabina Shoal and the latest flare-up of their territorial disputes in the South China Sea. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
It is really outrageous that after COVID, we're going back into the same situation.
The UN wants to vaccinate an estimated 640,000 children in Gaza for polio.
The vaccines have come in. We're calling for calm. We're calling for humanitarian pauses that will allow the vaccination programs to pass.
And pumpkin spice. It's as American as apple pie.
If you look at pumpkin spice coffee or latte, there are versions of these in over 80 countries, but the craze only happens in North America.
Today is Tuesday, August 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
We have a mechanism that at the press of a button, we can globally push in what needs to happen in terms of access to diagnostics, to therapeutics, and particularly to vaccines.
That's Helen Rees, Africa CDC's Mpox Emergency Committee member. While a host of factors have held back vaccine access in Congo, including a lack of funding, competing disease outbreaks, and slow progress by authorities there, which only approved the use of the shot domestically in June and did not request help for months, there is another major factor holding back access. That is the lack of an official approval from the World Health Organization for the two main Mpox vaccines.
It is really outrageous that after COVID, we're going back into the same situation, that, you know, the African region once again doesn't have access to vaccines easily, and that to actually get access is requiring these very complex negotiations with WHO as a conduit.
Another issue is getting to the people who need care and vaccination. Well, sometimes it's dangerous to travel where those people are. Health workers say armed gangs and rebel groups are obstructing their access to towns and villages that are suspected of having Mpox cases. The United Nations says international awareness is needed to reduce the upsurge of the virus. Steve Miller narrates this story from Moki Edwin Kinzika.
Officials in the Central African Republic, or CAR, say health workers striving to contain an outbreak of the Mpox virus are complaining of difficulties gaining safe access to towns and villages where armed gangs operate. Pierre Somsi is CAR's health minister. Somsi says armed groups should know that civilians whose lives are threatened by an unprecedented Mpox virus outbreak need urgent assistance. He says from less than 10 suspected cases in 2023, CAR has reported about 45 Mpox cases this year, and additional victims in bush and remote areas may be unreported. Somsi says armed groups in conflict zones like Bayonga Town near the Congo border should assist the CAR government in stopping the disease. Somsi spoke on CAR State TV. The Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, is another country with internal armed conflict. The WHO says that the country has more than 95% of the total of about 17,000 cases of Mpox reported globally this year. The Central African state reports close to 530 deaths from the disease. The UN says within the past few months, the virus has spread to five DRC neighbor nations, CAR, Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda. Lugunza Malasi Joseph is a former Doctors Without Borders staff member and is now a political advisor to Democratic Republic of Congo's environmental minister. He says the virus spreads rapidly because humanitarian workers have difficulties securely visiting conflict-prone sub-Saharan communities. Lugunza spoke to VOA via messaging app from Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
People run from areas where there is conflict, and in that running away, there is no observation of hygiene. People just run for their lives. This poses a problem because you can't teach people to observe health measures when they are first running for their own lives. Health professionals sometimes have to cross areas that are not secure. They can be attacked, they can be killed, and so forth.
Cameroon officials also say rebels are making it nearly impossible for health workers to have safe access to English-speaking regions where there are ongoing conflicts between government troops and armed separatists fighting to carve out independent states or regions from the French-majority country. Since July, Cameroon has reported at least 40 suspected Mpox cases. The Republic of Congo says it has confirmed 19 of 60 suspected cases in its territory and is checking its borders against mass movements from CAR and DRC, where there are armed conflicts. Nigeria also says its humanitarian workers are being restricted from educating civilians to protect themselves from Mpox after 32 states reported at least one confirmed case of the Mpox virus. Nigeria has been fighting for more than 10 years against Boko Haram terrorists near its northern border with Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, CAR, and DRC say they are deploying government troops to protect both civilians and health and humanitarian workers from rebels and armed groups. None of the sub-Saharan countries have reported deaths of humanitarian workers. From Moki Edwin Kinzika, I'm Steve Miller, VOA News.
Let's dig into the issues that aren't only in play with this current Mpox emergency, but with all the viruses that have and can spread globally. Joining us is Dr. Kizzmekia Corbett-Hilaire, who played a key role in developing the COVID-19 vaccine. She's an assistant professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. It's a difficult arena to reach people in Africa where this originated.
I mean, the truth is that's a fairly, it's a dense question and it's a fairly political question. There's, when you say we, are you speaking about us? You
know, I'm saying about the world. I'm like the United Nations, the United States, Great Britain, those countries and organizations that, you know, we have vaccines stockpiled for Mpox. How do we, you know, how does the world react better than we did in this instance?
The thing is, it's very hard to get everyone on the same accord around what's important from a public health standpoint when you're thinking about the entire world. It's not our first rodeo where we've had public health measures that work, whether they be vaccines or otherwise, but we haven't been able to get them where they need to go. This is a particular sticking situation because the reasons why aren't always able to be controlled by the people. There's going to be some like intricate, detailed organizational things that have to happen on a governmental front in order for us to penetrate the systems that are necessary to be penetrated right now and also in the future. One of the things that it becomes more and more apparent every single time there's an outbreak is that we're oftentimes acting in reactionary ways, which is, in my opinion, the opposite of how public health should work. You know, we always say, like, how can we do things right now? But I always beg of people to, whether they be, you know, regulatory people or, you know, the general public, whenever we can help, scientists, public health practitioners, et cetera, to think about how we can make systems better for the future. Because it's, you know, this is today's virus. But what happens in tomorrow's, in the case of tomorrow's virus?
Sure, and this is the perfect point that illustrates your point. I mean, this is the perfect situation that illustrates your point. There was an Mpox outbreak 2 years ago, and now here we are again.
Yeah. And here we will be again and again. I mean, I think history is continuing to repeat itself, and I think we're in this time where awareness of viral outbreaks is more heightened because we're on the, you know, at the end of the pandemic that was pretty detrimental around the globe. Following that, Mpox, and then, you know, we've had sprouts of bird flu here and there, and there's a recent outbreak in Saudi Arabia of MERS coronavirus. So viruses are certainly not going anywhere. Our senses are heightened and surveillance measures in so many instances are heightened to detect them. And so what that does, though, is unfortunately it kind of shines a light on the systems that we have not necessarily prepared in the best way.
Is it going to get worse? It seems to me, is it just that we know about it now? Has it been this way? Or is it getting worse that there are more global alerts from WHO in the last 10, 15 years?
I think one can argue either or a combination of both. Well, first, I think that one thing that we have to do is we have to define worse, right? So, I think the way that you are saying it is you mean, are there more outbreaks of novel viruses or pathogens happening more frequently now than ever before?
Exactly. So you had Ebola in the Obama administration,
right.
Then the pandemic, and then these two outbreaks of Mpox, and as you said, a number of things in between.
Right. And I think that the short answer to that is that probably over time, changes happen in the world becoming more populated in some instances, in some places. I think, urbanization of certain areas, I think, you know, global warming probably and most definitely plays some part in this. And then we have the fortunate side of being more technologically advanced is the ability to have very quick surveillance in the case of an outbreak, coordinated communication systems, you know, that operate such that if something is happening across the globe, that information, viral sequences from whatever outbreak is happening could be at our fingertips, you know, the next day even. I think there's a little bit of both. I think what becomes frightening as we say that is that, you know, if it is becoming more, if these types of outbreaks are becoming more frequent, then, you know, what are we going to do about that? And how are we going to, what's the sustainability given the current systems, given the current, what I would consider to be lack of preparedness, what I would consider to be, you know, differential or inadequate funding towards some viruses versus others, what I would consider to be sometimes even a lack of enthusiasm, quite frankly. Being prepared for things is less attractive scientifically, from a government standpoint, is less attractive than being in the moment and being able to respond adequately.
What would you do?
Oh, gosh. A lot of things. But, you know, I think that what's important to know is that this is not a situation that for which we can Band-Aid, right? It's these outbreaks and pandemics, these are surgical. The fix is surgical. Operationally, things are becoming less and less disjointed and more smooth as more and more outbreaks are happening.
Well, like we have currently, right? You have the vaccine. You've just got to get it into the arms.
Right. You have to get it into the arms. And then, you know, then one would say, like, oh, even when you can't get it into the arms, then you have hesitancy. And what do you do about that? And then so then that's when, like, the next tool of communication comes into play. The very long answer to what needs to happen is that there is going to have to be dedication in multiple different ways in order for it all to work together for the good and protect yourself.
Thank you so much for the time and the perspective.
Yes, of course. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Dr. Kizmikia Corbett-Hilaire with the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. The UN wants to vaccinate about 640,000 children in Gaza for polio. They had hoped to do it this coming weekend, but now that's in jeopardy after UN aid operations ground to a halt on Monday.
Over 3,000 people in total will be working on the campaign. Over 1,000 of them drawn from UNRWA, which is essentially the largest primary healthcare provider left in the Gaza Strip. The vaccines have come in. We're calling for calm. We're calling for humanitarian pauses that will allow the vaccination programs to pass and be implemented successfully.
The vaccination effort may not happen after Israel issued new evacuation orders on Sunday for the central Gaza Strip, where the UN Operations Center is located. Russia launched another attack on Ukraine Tuesday after pounding the country's power system on Monday. Also from Ukraine, word that it has a new homegrown long-range weapon that will allow it to strike deep into Russia without having to ask permission from its allies. It has the characteristics of a missile and a drone. Russia has dominated the skies since the outbreak of the war in February 2022. President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed on Saturday its existence, calling it a new class of weapon. Ukrainian military video hinted that its range is 430 miles, on par with U.S.-supplied missiles, which Ukraine is restricted from launching deep into Russia for fear of escalation. We're following these other stories from around the world. At least 73 people were killed in Pakistan's province of Baluchistan when separatist militants attacked police stations, railway lines, and highways. The assaults were the most widespread in years by ethnic militants fighting a decades-long insurgency to win secession of the resource-rich southwestern province, home to major Chinese-led projects such as a port and a gold and copper mine. French President Emmanuel Macron says the arrest in France of Pavel Durov, the CEO of the popular messaging app Telegram, was not a political move, but part of an independent investigation. In France's first public comment on the arrest, Macron posted on X on Monday that his country is deeply committed to freedom of expression, but, quote, freedoms are upheld within a legal framework, both on social media and in real life, to protect citizens and respect their fundamental rights. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 presidential election, since 2020, Asian Americans have been the fastest growing group of eligible voters in the U.S., according to Pew Research Center. In 2022, California had the most eligible Asian American voters in the U.S., followed by New York and Texas. From Houston, Elizabeth Lee has more on the potential challenges of the Asian American vote.
For flavors from Asia, Houston, Texas is a one-stop shop. The foods found here reflect the melting pot of Asian cultures living in the counties that make up the greater Houston region. One of them is suburban Fort Bend County, where Asians make up more than 21% of the population. It's also where Chinese-American immigrant J.J. Clements lives.
I think for either party, they really cannot afford to ignore the Asian community.
Asian Americans are among the fastest growing ethnic groups in the U.S., according to census data. Voter turnout among this group has also seen record increases in the past two presidential elections.
I was scared. People didn't feel...
The Democratic nominee for president, Kamala Harris, has taken notice and recently released two ads targeting Asians. More Asian Americans call themselves Democrat than Republican. One reason? More than half of Asian American voters are immigrants. Korean American Becky Kim is a first-time voter.
I think Trump's policies hurt minorities a lot.
Richard Murray is senior research fellow at the University of Houston.
A lot of his policies not only took aim at illegal immigrants from Mexico and South America, but also restricted legal immigration.
Still, a 2024 survey of Asian American voters found that 22% identify as Republicans. That includes Chinese American Daniel Wong.
Less government is what Asian want. More freedom and less tax.
The survey also found 31% of Asian American voters identify as independents. But 42% of Asian American voters surveyed say they have not been contacted by political candidates or a political party. Daniel Wong, who had served in local elected office, says Asian American voters are partly responsible.
We are not organized. We don't understand the American political system. That's why we don't know how we're going to energize, put our energy together to suit for whatever common goal which we don't have.
The projected 15 million Asian Americans eligible to vote have roots in different countries. Unifying Asian voters has been difficult. Getting Asians to donate to campaigns has also been a challenge, something Wong saw up close while running for a city council seat.
Asian, they are not used to donate to the political means. They don't understand how it works.
Clemens had also run for local office.
Asian society, I don't think they, like a Christian community, they have a habit to give. So you have to educate them, and you need to outreach them.
During the last presidential election, close to 60% of Asian Americans voted. Political activists say forming relationships with new Asian American citizens and educating them about the political process will mobilize them to get involved. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. In Sudan, surging waters have burst through a dam, wiped out at least 20 villages, and left at least 30 people dead.
Our humanitarian partners and local authorities are assessing the affected areas and will have additional clarity on the extent of the damage in the coming days.
UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric. Sudan's dams, roads, and bridges were already in disrepair before the war between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. And finally,
it's as American as it gets.
Dr. Marco Palma is a professor and director of the Human Behavior Laboratory at Texas A&M AgriLife Research.
If you look at pumpkin spice coffee or latte, there are versions of these in over 80 countries, but the craze only happens in North America. And there's a big reason for that. Pumpkins are one of the oldest native crops in the United States.
Here in the United States, about this time of year, you'll start to see all kinds of products with pumpkin flavoring, from donuts to coffee to cookies. It's a Halloween Thanksgiving thing, mostly, and it goes all the way back to the beginning.
Christopher Columbus speaks about pumpkins early on. Early Americans ate pumpkin pies in different forms. We drank pumpkin pies in early versions of beer. George Washington mentions pumpkin spice as part of his farms.
That's right, pumpkin spice beer. And it's not just the taste. There's an emotional aspect to the craze in America.
I think that it has to do with the exclusivity of the product. There's a short, limited window when people can get it. And so that brings about many issues related to having something that is rare, that is special, and that people want to try. And so if we look at the reasons for consuming, that brings appeal for emotional consumption. It's about what lies ahead. There are many beautiful things that we enjoy during the fall, and the pumpkin spice is a way to signal that those things are coming. So it brings about two different factors. One is exclusivity. People fear missing out on that exclusivity. And it also signals the start of a new season that brings many things ahead, including football, including many other activities that we enjoy as Americans.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.